to decide. One is whether or not the lower court erred in overruling the appellant's motion to suppress, and number two, whether or not the lower court erred in finding the 2004 Missouri prior conviction for DUI to be a valid conviction for enhancement purposes. The facts in this case are pretty simple. On May 26th of 2013, at approximately 5:39 a.m., Officer Wagner with the Lincoln Police Department received some dispatched information that a vehicle, a white Dodge Ram pickup truck, was parked somewhat suspiciously in the area of 9th and A Streets. The officer ended up going to that area. There's very limited information in the record surrounding the source of this call to dispatch. All that was available to the officer at the time of this particular contact was the first name of the reporting party and a phone number. Other information that was lacking in the record would be the reporting party's last name. It was never confirmed in the record whether or not this phone number was valid or whether or not it was a track phone or anything that could have been established in terms of being an accurate number. There was no face-to-face interaction between the officer and the reporting party. And the officer actually made attempts to identify this reporting party after the fact and was unsuccessful in those attempts. So I believe the record does establish this person be characterized as an anonymous person and anonymous information. The only information the officer was given was that this vehicle was allegedly parked in a suspicious manner, part on the curb, part in the street. Much information was lacking in the report the officer received. There's no evidence as to when the suspect vehicle arrived at the location, the identity of the person who drove the vehicle to that location, and whether or not the reporting party was reporting from a first-hand account. Nothing in the record suggests that the reporting party who called in to the dispatch said, "I personally saw this truck parked in this fashion." Rather, it's unclear whether or not this was a second-hand account. And there's no evidence in the record to suggest what type of call was made, i.e., was it a 911 call or a non-emergency dispatch call. That's all silent in the record. When Officer Wagner drove to 13th and A Streets, he saw no vehicle matching the description. And it's worth noting that he arrived in the area within about 2 minutes of receiving this dispatched call. So there was no corroboration to support what this anonymous person reported in the 911 or dispatch call. Again, I don't think the record suggests that it was a 911 call. And then when the officer was driving back to the substation in the area of 13th and Washington Streets, several blocks from the original 9th and A location, he did see a vehicle matching the description, which was parked normally and legally in front of an apartment complex in a residential neighborhood here in Lincoln, Nebraska. The officer then pulls directly behind the suspect vehicle, activates the cruiser's overhead lights, and then the officer, while in uniform with a badge and a gun and a marked cruiser, exits his patrol car, walks up to the vehicle, sees the driver is awake and on the telephone of a running vehicle. The officer proceeds to knock on the driver's side door of this vehicle, direct him to roll down the vehicle, and then that's when the DUI investigation ensues. Now, it's appellant's position that clearly a seizure occurred in this case, that a reasonable person in Mr. Gilliam's position would not have felt free to leave under those circumstances.
When does the seizure occur?
Judge, I would argue that the seizure occurs when the officer pulls directly behind him and activates the overhead lights. And even if the court doesn't agree with that, I believe the seizure would have occurred when the officer walked up to the vehicle and knocked on the window and directed him to roll down the window. This is not a situation where the record merely establishes that the officer pulled behind the suspect vehicle and turned on the overhead lights. He took additional steps. He exited his marked patrol cruiser, badge, uniform, and gun, walked up, knocked on the window, and directed him to roll it down. I would argue that the seizure occurred when he pulled directly behind him and turned on the overhead lights, because, again, we're talking about dark nighttime hours. We're talking about an awake driver. This isn't somebody that was sleeping or passed out, and somebody that's on the phone. And given the circumstances, it would be unreasonable for a person in Mr. Gilliam's position to have believed that he was not the subject of this officer's authority at that point.
Are you arguing that there is a seizure every time an officer turns on their lights?
I don't believe it is every time, Your Honor, but I think you've got to look at the totality of the circumstances. In this particular case, given the situation with the officer pulling directly behind the suspect vehicle, unlike the cases and the statutes that the lower court cited where the officers are just trying to warn the general public of an upcoming road hazard or an accident or pulling over another vehicle, this case is distinguishable from that. I don't believe a reasonable person in Mr. Gilliam's position would have felt like they weren't the subject of this particular investigation. But again, when you take it a step further, even if the court doesn't agree that the mere act of activating the overhead lights directly behind the suspect vehicle at night in a residential neighborhood, a reasonable person would not feel free to leave under those circumstances. The additional steps of exiting, knocking on the door, and directing him to roll down the window, that's an order, that's a command, that is a show of authority that a reasonable person would not feel like they could just ignore and drive off. And under those circumstances, I believe that a seizure did occur. And in my brief, I cite, I think the vast majority of states that have ruled on this issue have found that the officer pulling behind a parked vehicle with an awake occupant activating the overhead lights is a seizure. I think I cited 17 or 18 cases to that effect from other jurisdictions that agree with the appellant's position in this particular case. And in this case, Judge, I do think that a reasonable that there was a seizure. And if the court does find a seizure, I would argue that there's no reasonable suspicion to believe that any crime had occurred to justify this particular detention. Again, this evidence came, the call came from what could only be characterized as an anonymous caller, a person with a first name, no last name, a phone number that was never confirmed, never tracked down, no evidence it was a 911 call. The state never called the dispatcher. They never called the reporting party. They never offered in the called tape. And under similar facts in the Navarette, California versus Navarette case, the Supreme Court found that person, even though they left their name, to be an anonymous caller. They assessed that case as though it was an anonymous caller, despite the fact that the person left their name. In this case, they only left their first name. And what's also lacking in this case is sufficient indicia of reliability to support this particular caller. Again, there's no evidence of a 911 or a first-hand account, unlike the Navarette case where the reporting party says, I was the one who was run off the road. This is a first-hand account. This is not the case in the Gilliam case today.
In this case, your client is charged with a DUI.
Correct.
Which is entirely different from what the phone call was about. Does that make any difference?
If I understand your question correctly, Mr. Chief Justice, I think what you're saying is sometimes there seems to be a DUI exception to the Fourth Amendment. If somebody's an ongoing crime, if somebody's creating a present danger to the public and driving drunk, then officers need less corroboration consistent with Navarette to support the stop. But in this case, I think that doesn't matter because in this case, the report was a parking violation. There was no evidence to support this that this reporting party ever saw this vehicle move. There's no evidence of careless or reckless or negligent driving on the part of this person. There's no evidence who drove the parked the vehicle in that location. There's no evidence of the impairment level or when that happened.
But do you expect the officer to, let's say, in the middle of a stop, he comes to the window, he realizes from the smell inside the vehicle that there's alcohol involved here. If the officer said, oh, I'm sorry, I think I've made a mistake, I'm not going to pursue the DUI aspect of that, does that make sense?
It does make sense, but I think if this case hinges on when the officer found out about the odor. The officer did not find out about the odor of alcohol until he ordered him to roll down the window. There was no reason for him to contact this particular motorist and order him to roll down the window because there's no reasonable suspicion that he committed any crime at that point.
But if the officer didn't proceed at that point in time, wouldn't the officer be negligent?
I don't believe so. I think the Fourth Amendment, I think he would have been competent by complying with what I think the Fourth Amendment would require, which would be reasonableness. This was an anonymous call of a parking violation. This was not reporting an ongoing crime, as this court addressed in Rodriguez and citing Navarette. This was a past isolated parking incident that happened who knows how many hours earlier by who knows who. This is not an ongoing crime where anybody was in danger. There's no evidence to suggest whoever parked that vehicle on 9th and A Street at whatever time it happened was impaired or was a dangerous driver. And when the officer drove by 13th and Washington, he saw a vehicle that was parked normally, unsuspiciously, nothing about the manner in which that vehicle was parked.
Is there any dispute that the initial call, regardless of its attributes, was with respect to a car or a truck partially parked on the street and the curb?
Again, I would question the reliability of that call, but the report was that the car was partially parked on the curb and partially in the street. The record is silent and nothing.
But the testimony of the officer was to that effect. That's right. What the officer understood the call was.
That's what he understood. But the officer, when he went to 9th and A, he didn't see the vehicle. So the record's unclear as to how far was the vehicle parked into the street. How far was it up onto the curb? Was it one tire, two tires? Was it perpendicular?
Is this undisputed whether or not all the attributes of the call are sound, right? That there's a car park. It's wonky, and so it's curious. Somebody calls it in, right?
Right. I think what is being reported isn't disputed that a car was parked in a suspicious manner. But what's in dispute is the reliability of the person and how bad this vehicle was parked. And there's no evidence to suggest that person had to be impaired.
The officer says, based on experience, this kind of thing might be achieved by a drunk driver?
What the officer testified to was, given the time of night, the drunk driver, this is more peak driving drunk, may I finish the question?
You may.
It's more likely that it'd be a drunk driver. The problem, Your Honor, is that we don't know when this vehicle was parked in that location. It could have been parked at that location at noon, and under an unpeak time for DUI offenses, the officer is merely reporting to a responding to a call that was made at 5:30 a.m. That's not contemporaneous with when the parking violation occurred. So you can't presume that just because the vehicle is parked suspiciously that it equates to a drunk driver when we don't know when that vehicle was parked at that location or who did it and how badly it was parked.
Mr. Raffel, I'd like to ask you about the characterization of the evidence that the officer commanded the defendant to roll down the window. As I'm reading from the trial judge's order, which would seem to me to be a factual finding, it says Officer Wagner pulled in behind the Dodge Ram, activated the cruiser's overhead emergency lights, and walked up to the driver's side of the pickup. The officer made contact with the driver and only occupant of the Dodge Ram by knocking on the window, after which the driver rolled the window down. I don't see any factual finding that this was a command.
Judge, I agree. In the judge's lower court's order, it didn't make the specific factual finding that the window was, that Officer Wagner directed my client to roll down the window. However, any finding to the contrary, I believe, would be clearly erroneous, because I can cite the court to the exact page and line where Officer Wagner testified that he directed him to roll down the window. It's on page 14, lines 20 through 25. Officer Wagner says he approached the window, knocked on it, directed the client to roll down the window. So the fact that the court didn't make that specific factual finding in its order doesn't mean that the factual fact didn't occur. I'd argue that any finding to the contrary would be contrary to the evidence. And I would also argue that, again, the only witness who testified was Officer Wagner. So that testimony about him directing to go down was uncontroverted.
Thank you.
We'd ask the court to sustain the motion to suppress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Klein, good morning.
Please support Mr. Chief Justice. I'm Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, I think this could be fairly characterized as a close call between a Tier 1 and a Tier 2 encounter, but I think the district court, in its findings and in its order, correctly came to the conclusion that it is a Tier 1 contact between the officer and the defendant in this case. The officer was at the police station when he got a dispatch saying, we've got a report from somebody that there is a white Dodge Ram pickup, license number, whatever it was, gave the accurate license number. It's parked on 9th and A Street, which Officer Wagner testified is a one-way street upon which there is no parking. Consequently, it posed a rather, and since it was like basically 5:30 in the morning, it consequently posed a traffic hazard, and he promptly took off to go and make contact with it. He said he arrived in less than 2 minutes and the truck was no longer there. So he said, truck wasn't there, so I turned around to go back to the police station. 3.5 blocks from there, I'm on my way back, and lo and behold, I come across the exact same truck that was just described to me 3.5 blocks from the location whence it was described. It was parked on 13th and Washington Street. It was legally parked, he said, but it was some distance from the curb at this point. He said the lights were on and the motor was running on this thing, indicating to him that it had just recently been driven. So based upon the information he had gotten about it being illegally parked previously, and it was illegally parked, whether it's really illegally parked or sort of illegally parked, it was illegally parked. And that's really all that matters for purposes of reasonable suspicion. So the officer said, it's 5:30 in the morning, I know the truck, there's been a report that the truck was illegally parked, it's been moved, it appears that it has just recently been moved, because the engine is still running, the lights are on, it may well be about to move off again. I know from my training and experience that this is kind of prime time for drunk drivers. I should probably make contact with this person and see what is going on. Based on his experience and training and the facts that were known to him at that time, he pulled in behind the truck, activated his overhead lights, which is a point of contention, and made contact with the driver. Now, The act of putting on the overhead lights can be interpreted one of two ways. The district court interpreted it as simply, essentially, a safety matter. You pulled in behind him, it's still dark, there's no question about that, and the officer turned on the overhead lights to indicate to passing traffic that there was a potential, essentially, road hazard here to proceed out around it with caution. The defendant argues that it could be that it is essentially a you will not move until I make contact with you, and therein, I think, lies one of the greatest bones of contention. I think, however, the district court's interpretation, based on the facts of this case, is entirely reasonable under these circumstances. Excuse me, the officer turned on his lights because it was...
What is our standard of review of the district court's determination?
Excuse me, factual determinations are reviewed for clear error, and legal determinations are reviewed independently.
Is this a factual determination or a legal determination?
Well, in some respects, it's a little bit of both. I think it's more on the order of a factual determination as to why the officer activated his lights, and I think from that fact you make a legal conclusion, but I think that's basically a factual determination, excuse me, based on the other facts and circumstances of this particular situation. I think based on those facts and circumstances that the district court correctly concluded that it was a tier one contact. I think once the officer tapped on the window and the window was rolled down and Officer Wagner was basically bowled over by the wall of alcohol coming from the car, I think at that point it becomes essentially a tier two, i.e. a Terry investigation seizure type of situation. But up until that point, I think the district court correctly concluded that this was a tier one contact between the officer and the defendant in this case. And I don't think that the motion to suppress was incorrectly decided as a result of that.
Mr. Rappel places great emphasis on the command to roll down the window as opposed to the factual finding that the trial judge made that the driver rolled down the window. What significance, if any, do you think that has in the analysis of a tier one versus a tier two?
Well, I think you'd have to find that the it's a factor to be considered. I think whether or not that is a factual determination made by the district court that is clearly erroneous based on the record would have to be looked at on the sum total of the rest of the record. I do believe the officer's testimony was that he, quote-unquote, directed him to roll down the window. I don't know that that in and of itself, I don't think, converts it to from a Tier 1 to a Tier 2 situation. It would be a factor to be considered, but it's much easier to talk to somebody without a window in the between the two of you than it is to talk through a window.
So your view is it remained a Tier 1 encounter up until the odor was detected, and at that point you would concede it became a Tier 2
encounter?
Yes,
I think that's exactly what happened in this particular case.
All right. Thank you.
Your Honors, with respect to the prior conviction, I think we have adequately addressed that in our brief unless there are specific questions about it. Then we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed in this case. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal, so that concludes our arguments for today. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.